Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. There is nothing more tempting than a day off spent soaking up the sun on a hot beach with a good read. Summer reads don't have to be mindless, though. Michelle Filgate is a testament to that. We turn to her to find the perfect book for every occasion, and she's not afraid to add some substance, some old, some new, to the usually light fare offered by beach blanket lists. Michelle is a writer, book critic, and independent bookseller at Community Bookstore in Brooklyn. Great to have you back with us, Michelle.
Thanks for having me, Virginia.
So let's start with a traditional beach read. Any must-read page-turner for the summer?
Yes, I actually want to recommend something by an author who I've talked about on the show before. His name is Rick Yancey, and he writes a lot of young adult books. And his newest book is called The Fifth Wave. It's the first in a trilogy set in a world where aliens have attacked, and no one knows who's an alien and who's a human anymore. The main character is a girl who is separated from her brother and determined to be reunited with him. And it has a love story. I like to compare it to The Hunger Games and to Ender's Game. And it already got a huge movie deal. It's going to be a big deal. And it's a book that you just cannot put down as soon as you start reading.
So another post-apocalyptic YA novel. What sets this one apart?
Rick Yancey is an incredible writer, so it's not just a really good plot, but he's a good storyteller, and we are inundated with a lot of post-apocalyptic books, but this one is a must-read.
Why do you think summer reading is so often associated with the page-turners, with entertaining books, sort of checking out your mind?
I think it's because most people, you know, want an escape and to zone out on their summer vacation or on the beach. And I completely get that. But, you know, I'm all for reading books for escapism as well, as indicated by the book I just picked. But I also think that, you know, wintertime isn't the only time of year to read brainier books and books that, you know, you won't see on most summer reading lists. I find that, you know, when you're in the sun, you can read a darker book and it's okay because the sun is out and it's nice outside and the world seems okay and it's not dark and dreary.
All right. So how about some of those brainier books we often turn to you for? Any titles you want to recommend?
Okay. So there's a book I just read that I am crazy over the moon about and I want to get everyone to read. It was published by a small press called Coffee House Press and it's called Submergence by J.M. Ledgard. It's a story about a man and a woman who meet on the French coast and have a romance. But then at the same time, it's flash forwarding to later when the man, who is a spy, is being held by Somali terrorists while the woman, who's a biomathematician and obsessed with the microbes in the deepest part of the ocean, is studying that and preparing to submerge into the ocean. And this is a book that's really about the language. There are just some incredible sentences. Like, I want to read this one quote where he says, "We want to know what is in the sky and what is behind the sky. These have been our obsessions since our beginnings, yet the curiosity does not extend to the ocean. We forget there is so much darkness in our world, and to be out on a beach is to be lucky."
All right, how about another beachy read?
So another read by someone named Matt Bell, who I'm friendly with, he wrote this book called In the House Upon the Dirt Between the Lake and the Woods. Try saying that 10 times fast. But it's astoundingly beautiful. You know, his sentences are like incantations. My boyfriend, who's also a book critic, rightly described it as a combination between Cormac McCarthy and Angela Carter. And
wow.
I have to agree with him. I think that that's the highest praise you can give a book. And what it is it's a creation myth. It's a man and a woman who are living in this house and trying to have children. And, you know, it goes wrong. And the father swallows this foundling who's swimming inside of him and kind of trying to turn him against his wife as they continue to try to have children. And there's a bear and there's a squid. And so there's a lot of mythology going on in this book. The wife sings a moon into existence and sings rooms beneath the house into existence. And it's terrifying at parts. And it's also just gorgeous prose. I want to read the whole book aloud because it's beautiful to read aloud.
I'm going to try and say that title, In the House Upon the Dirt Between the Lake and the Woods by Matt Bell.
Yes.
All right, turning the page to nonfiction. Any recommendations there?
So an author we have both talked about on the show before, Kate Christensen. She's
right,
one of my favorite
Epicurus Lament.
Writers. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. And that was my favorite book by her before I read this. And now tying with it is her brand new memoir that's coming out this summer called Blue Plate Special. I think it started, she was writing, and she has been writing a blog where she shares personal essays and then incorporates recipes with those essays. And in this book, it's very much a book about how food has shaped her life. She's an incredible cook herself. And in all of her novels, her characters are obsessed with food. And so this is a book where we get to see what Kate's obsession with food comes from and also how food has nourished her.
There's another book on your nonfiction list that I'm really looking forward to. It sounds like it's going to be the kind of kitchen confidential of the elite publishing world.
I think that's a fantastic comparison, actually. It's called Hot House by Boris Kochka. He writes for New York Magazine. He has a lot of insider scoop. And it's all about FSG, which is one of the most important publishers of all time. You know, they're the ones who have published Jonathan Franzen and Susan Sontag, and it goes on and on. But this book is a gossipy and frothy tale of the founding of this publisher up until the present time. So you really see the evolution of a publishing house. And I think it was Juno Diaz who blurbed it and compared it to Mad Men. And I think that people who, you know, like Mad Men will enjoy this book. There's even a scene where you hear about two women who are sleeping with one of the publishers who go shopping together to get matching bathrobes so that he feels comfortable when he goes home on during his lunch. You just can't even imagine this stuff happened.
But. Right. Who knew the publishing world could be so juicy? Now, this is Farrar, Straus, and Giroux is FSG?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So that's Hot House by Boris Kochka, which I don't see yet in reviews.
Yeah, it's not coming out until August, but it's a book that everyone should read once it's out.
You've got another book that is quite a throwback. I guess one of the first confessional diaries ever published. Tell us about I Await the Devil's Coming.
Yes, it's by Mary MacLean, and this was originally published in 1902, and it basically conveys the thoughts of a 19-year-old girl who lives in Montana. It's incredibly narcissistic and raw, but it's also riveting. When the book was originally published, it apparently sold 100,000 copies, and I can definitely see why, because it was shocking for the time. She talks about her sexuality and her desires, and, you know, there's this one quote that kind of sums up that I just want to read, where she says, "Fame may pass over my head, money may escape me, my one friend may fail me, every hope may fold its tent and steal away. Happiness may remain a sealed book, every remnant of human ties may vanish. I may find myself an outcast, good things held out to me may suddenly be withdrawn, the stars may go out one by one, the sun may go dark, yet still I may hold upright my head if I have but my steak and my onions." So this is a book that's very much about a girl's desires, whether it's, you know, sexual or food. And I think that it's a book that really opened up the ability for contemporary memoirs as they are. And so it's a really fascinating look at this girl in the 1900s.
Mary MacLean's I Await the Devil's Coming. That is one of the nonfiction recommendations from Michelle Philgate. She's an independent bookseller, a writer herself, and a book critic. And she's bringing us through some summertime book suggestions that you may not find at the top of the pack in your local bookstore. But that's why we turn to her. Michelle, you mentioned earlier that we can afford to read books about darker subjects in the summer. And you have a couple of books about loneliness on the list. Why should we read a sad book in the summer?
Because it's, you know, why not? Some of the best books that are written, you know, are about the incredible sadness of being a human and what we go through every day. And two of my favorite books that I've read this year, actually, I read back to back, and they both have similar themes about loneliness in them, even though they're very different. The first one is called Turtle Diary by Russell Hoban. New York Review of Books Classics just reissued this, and it originally came out in the 1970s. You might recognize the name Russell Hoban because he's also the beloved children's author who wrote Bread and Jam for Francis and many other books. But this book is very different. It's about a man who's a bookseller and a woman who's a children's writer. And they both become obsessed with the idea of the turtles in the zoo. And they want to release these turtles. And it goes back and forth between their viewpoints. And, you know, both of them are middle-aged and dealing with their own disappointments in their lives. There's a lot of sadness in this book, but there's also a lot of beauty. And I kept underlining almost every sentence, and I quoted a lot on my blog. And I just thought that it's slim, but packs a punch. And then right after that, I read The Illusion of Separateness by Simon Van Boy, who's a Welsh author. And I had always meant to read his books. I've heard very good things about his previous works. But now that I read this novel, I need to read everything he has written, because he reminds me of a modern day Hemingway, but a Hemingway with more heart. His prose is really stark, but he's able to say so much in so few words. Like, there's one sentence where he says, "Every day is a masterpiece, even if it crushes you." Mm. And this book is all centered around people whose lives are connected, all because of a baby who is saved during World War II. And some of the characters are lonely people. There's a character in this book who's a blind girl who yearns for love, and another who's a caretaker at a nursing home. And when I got to the last chapter of this book, I kind of do a bad thing where I walk in while I'm reading in New York City, which is very dangerous. But when I'm reading a good book, I just can't put it down. And I was standing outside of a restaurant on a sidewalk in New York, a crowded sidewalk, and I just started weeping during this last chapter. Just didn't even care. So when a book makes you cry in public, you know that it's good.
Well, that's pretty high praise. There are a couple of other books on Michelle's list that we won't be able to get to. Those are of the pop culture genre, but it's not that we disparage them. It's just that we don't have time for all so many books. Isn't that just the problem with summer? Michelle Filgate is a writer, book critic, and independent bookseller at Community Bookstore in Brooklyn. Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle.
Thanks, Virginia.
Now, you can find a list and more on all the books that Michelle mentioned here at wordofmouthradio.org.